The U.S. Congress, for many years now, has written more money into the Defense Appropriation Act than the president requests in the budget request that comes out every February. So the lesson there is Congress can turn on those spigots. I mean, they can authorize and appropriate all kinds of resourcing. When they turn those spigots on, you need to make sure that the plumbing is all lined up so that that stream doesn't go somewhere that you don't intend for it to go, and or it doesn't reach your intended objective or target, you know, program office too fast or at too high a rate that they can't handle it.
This is All Quiet on the Second Front, a podcast where boring conversations around defense tech and national security come to die. Join me, Tyler Sweat, and my Second Front comrades as we dismantle the mundane, cut through the bureaucratic BS to demystify the world of defense tech. But be warned, this is not a typical government podcast. Ready to get weird? This is a Soulfire production.
What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Tyler Sweat. Andrews, thanks for tuning into another episode of All Quiet on the Second Front, the podcast where boring defense talk comes to die. Really excited to dig in today with Garrett, who I will let him introduce himself, but excited to click into I think a spot we talk around a lot, but don't talk about a lot, which is like really bringing products into defense and national security, sort of being a product first and product driven organization in this community. So before we get all carried away and I take us down that road, Garrett, brother, thanks for making some time to come hang out. Give the people a little bit sort of who are you, where'd you come from? What the heck is Reveal, sort of all that?
Yeah, as my team will tell you, I can wax long. So kick me under the virtual table if I'm rambling, Tyler. Sorry in advance. Sorry in advance to the audience and to you as the host. But thank you for having me on. Everybody, Garrett Smith, founder and CEO at Reveal Technology. We're a defense technology company. We build software for the hyper-tactical environment. Very specifically, we have a couple of products, one flagship product in particular that converts streaming ISR visual and non-visual information into downstream three-dimensional GIS products, geospatial intelligence products. Imagine that the tactical environment, and I'm making the assumption here that the audience listener base can at minimum empathize with what the tactical environment is all about. Many of them have probably, you know, been there and done that, as you and I have been. So I'll try not to get too jargony and acronym rich in this exposition. But we imagine that this is a battalion S2 GIS cell NGA in the palm of your hand on a mobile device, resident and organic at the hyper tactical level, so that operators no longer need to rely on a reach back capability to generate their own situational awareness, actionable intelligence at the tactical front. So what is this product? It's called Farsight. Is our flagship product. It lives on a mobile device carried on the chest or arm strap or whatever of a tactical operator out there on the fringes of the battle space. So long as you expose that tactical device to streaming ISR video, it converts it into three-dimensional mapping products that can be used downstream for all kinds of things. Navigation, assured position navigation, timing, targeting workflows, the whole nine yards. That's probably rounds out like what the company does. Personally, I'm a force reconnaissance officer, Marine force reconnaissance officer by background. I'm still in the reserve. I've got about 19 satisfactory years and a couple of unsat years in the reserve. My reservist homies will know what I'm talking about and how hard a grind that can be. But it's been extremely rewarding. And maybe this is a good pivot point into the product conversation, Tyler. But the last thing I'll say here by way of introduction is that we are the end user. Like my co-founders, many of the company, to include myself, are of the end user set that we're trying to service with our technology. So we get it. We are empathetic. We understand what that environment's all about, the capabilities, limitations of the current equipment set, and what's on the horizon. So that has informed us, and we are passionately delivering.
Yeah, I mean, I love the sort of pivot as we're turning into the understanding and that empathy with the end user community and sort of the changing operational reality that the end user is being tasked to execute missions across. Which brings me to sort of the at a high level, as we start talking about, like, what does it mean to be a product, you know, a product organization, product company in defense and national security, sort of frame it with that, but then taking it down and making it even a little bit more tangible is, as you sort of sit back and we're thinking about, all right, what does sort of the path from, like, hey, we know we've got a problem because we lived this problem, to we have a flagship product, like, peel the veneer back of, like, we've got a really cool whiz bang product, and talk to me about what comes in underneath that.
Yeah. So first off, a comment about the environment. There are very few shortcuts or hacks to accelerate a product adoption cycle within the government or defense market that we're talking about today, and where we live. And our experience has been now doing multiple product development cycles that it takes truly between 3 and 4 years from cold start, no product, no, like, problem curation, to programmatic or production grade adoption by a US DoD stakeholder or program executive office or whomever, an end user set. It takes a long time. The choice is, like, how do you want to spend that time? Most folks in the defense industry, and indeed all of the primes, wait for requirements to be handed to them by friendly program executive officers who then kind of, like, articulate and de-risk the pathway for a very lengthy government funded RDT&E or R&D or NRE cycle with that prime contractor. And the end result is something like a product. You know, I've got a tighter definition of what a product is, but, like, most of the things that come out of that workflow end up getting adopted, and for good reason. They're tooled, refined over the course of an engagement with a PEO, and they adopt them. That doesn't often meet the needs of the end user or the actual operating environment, because that process takes a long time and it's informed by fairly rigid requirements written by fairly senior folks who are oftentimes disconnected from the actual end user environment. In the ideal situation, that actually produces pretty good products. Another method is taking a relationship heavy approach to building a technology, or thinking you know what the technology is that is needed or best used in the environment by an end user, and developing a product that way. Reveal from day zero has taken the approach of, we need to first meet with end users. We need to understand their problem. And end users, just as a caveat or a sidebar here, end users are not the buyers. End users are not often the customers. They're not paying you. They're not defining requirements, but they are the ones who are going to end use the technology, right? They're the ones who are the beneficiaries of the technology deployment. So we knew that those people needed to have the strongest voice in our product development cycle. And once we understood that, we joined hands with them and went to the government labs and the program executive offices and proposed projects that were then snapped up into the formal acquisitions process. But that entire process ended up taking from cold start to now reveal being on the doorstep of, you know, big production grade deployments within the US Army. It has taken us well over 3 years to do that. And I think we did it about as fast as you possibly can. And, you know, it really does start with a huge degree of empathy for the end user, incorporating their feedback into the product development cycle, which we've done not only through, like, direct engagements here in the US domestically amongst that user set, but actively going into conflict zones overseas to learn what the modern environment looks like. And then, you know, strapping together all the enabling components of what can de-risk and de-risk that process and make it successful on the back end.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous amount of progress you guys have made, and a ton of, like, very, very cerebral work down, like, parsing apart the end user sort of preferences and needs, wants and desires, and, like, really getting an idea of what that looks like. Yeah, I want to go back to, because I think you did a great job sort of walking through what is that end user engagement and how do you build that sort of tactical and situational empathy. You know, you made the comment and you were absolutely spot on. Like, hey, this isn't the buyer. This isn't necessarily the customer, right? As folks are thinking about, you know, the design and the end user and all of that, how do you get smart about, you know, the buyer and understanding that, you know, in your guys' example, a bunch of tactical sort of end users down at, like, you know, the pointy end of a spear somewhere. who are like, yeah, hey, this rules. How do you, when do you start thinking about the broader sequencing? Because like you and I have talked ad nauseum about it. Like, yeah, hey, like we can sort of wave our fists at the sky that like, hey, the process should change and the ecosystem should change and it shouldn't be far or it shouldn't be POM cycles this way or there's prime shouldn't do the cool. The reality is it is that way. So how do you start to take that product-led approach but synchronize it with the broader sort of machine that we're trying to work within?
Yeah, so I'm an innovator and an entrepreneur. I like to break things or bend things when they need to be broken and bent, as I'm sure you do, as many of the listeners do too. But you know, we confronted the reality that the far is the far, primes are primes, gov's gov. You know, it's the reality of the operating system or the operating environment that we're in, and like it doesn't make sense to scream into that wind or to beat your head against that wall, and instead just accept that that's the way it is. So I would say as early as possible, you need to engage on a multi-pronged, multi-line of effort approach where not only are you engaging the end user and developing the best possible product for them, you need to be simultaneously building the connectivity with production owners of products. And those are the PDMs and PMs within program executive offices. They need to be aware of what you're doing. They need to be aware of and hear the demand signal from those end users who are being pleased over the course of, you know, your product development cycles. They need to be hearing from you. And then you need to understand the resourcing requirements of that programmatic home. Oftentimes, you made reference to the POM cycle. You know, this is a multi-year budgeting effort. And if you're hitting them off cycle or in an off year, they are not going to have money to buy a lot of new stuff or to invest in new product development or refinement or certification or all the things that we know are part of that landscape. So actively engaging them in good faith, understanding their needs, understanding whether they're going to have adequate budget later this year to do the thing that you're proposing or next year. And if they don't, actively, you know, engaging the congressional landscape as an example to find off your directed appropriations to projects or programs that you care about. It's about like understanding the certification ATO requirements downstream and actively helping partner with and help your PEO or lab counterparts to navigate that and to build that into your collaborative or mutual roadmap. Those things are critical and necessary. And you know, the sooner you accept that that is the way that it is, and that those are the necessary things for you both to accomplish as partners, the better off you're going to be, and the faster you're going to be able to deliver that kind of cutting edge product that you've been working on with an end user.
Yeah. I want to foot stop something and then have you confirm or deny if I'm packaging this sort of message in a super simple takeaway. What I heard through all of that is, hey, you product company, product leader must be able to effectively help and create and set conditions for adoption and drive the PEO and PDM's leadership where they need to go, sometimes handholding, sometimes coaching, sometimes maybe pushing or pulling, versus, hey, you need to go talk to them and they will tell you what to do in what order and direct you. Did I hear that right? Is that the right way folks need to be thinking about that?
Can confirm. And in many cases, it has been incumbent on us, the private company, to grab the hand of our APDM, you know, counterpart and walk them through the process as we understand it, but remain open-minded, of course. Like, you know, this is not a directive sort of an engagement, yeah, but like hold their hand, and they need good partners.
It's an active two-way partnership is the big thing, right? Like, it's just, they don't have some playbook that they're going to run you through and be like, cool, go do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We'll do 6, 7, 8, 9. And then we'll both do 10 together. You're going to have to collaboratively figure out the right sequencing and then be comfortable with each sometimes taking different leads towards that common objective.
That's right. So I'm as enthused as you and everybody is that we have tons of new entrants into the defense technology kind of startup innovation ecosystem over the last 5, 8, 10 years. However, most of those companies are largely commercially oriented or commercially focused and or young teams that don't really understand the defense acquisitions ecosystem. It's a hard thing to understand for anybody. seasoned veterans will tell you that it's really difficult after even spending 20 years in this industry. But absolutely, if you don't understand that ecosystem, it will slow you down. There are still ways to do this, but it will slow you down by years. Because the worst thing, and hopefully this isn't too esoteric a comment, but the worst thing would be you try to sell the government something in April of this year after the Defense Appropriations Act request process closes, and then you find out that your customer doesn't have money, and then you have to wait for not only the next year to influence congressional appropriations, but that'll actually hit in the next fiscal year. So like, if you miss that window, if you don't understand that that's a requirement and a need for your customer and then miss that request window, man, you're shit out of luck for 18 months. I mean, it is going to be hard.
You just hit on that last part that I want to click us into, right? So we talked about, you know, the end user from a product standpoint. We talked about extensibility into the POs and scaling into, you know, liberating beyond sort of production in major sort of program offices. That sort of last leg of this stool is that sort of like enablers game, right? Like, what enablers do you need to bring it? And you just started to allude to it with like funding cycles and understanding where Congress is or isn't. I mean, even maybe something as simple as, hey, does the program or the office you're trying to support like have a PE? What does that mean? And for everybody, a program element, it's a place that Congress can send money. Because I think a lot of times people will yell like, hey, you should send money here. And then the question becomes like, where do I direct that money?
Right.
But yeah, not to load the question, but yeah, talk to me about enablement and stuff.
All good. Fair to load the question. There's so much to talk about on this topic. There ought to be like, you know, an Oprah masterclass on this sort of thing where like, you know, some celebrity acquisitions expert does the masterclass thing on this. I actually think that would be important at like DAU or something. I mean, that could be really great. So enablers, there are so many different constituents and players in this whole process. I think where you're wanting to go, and I'll get there, is congressional connectivity and helping to plug resourcing and budgeting gaps in future years.
Could be partners and stuff too, channels. Yeah.
Partners, I mean, as a young company, it's like chic and cliche, but chic and kind of sexy and fun to complain about the big defense primes. These are part of the landscape too. Many of them can be incredibly helpful because they own giant contract vehicles and they influence the requirements process and they influence PEO's thinking and production contracting and de-risking things for the government. I mean, there's plenty there. I want to talk about two key enablers. My second one will be, I think, where you want to go with Congress. The first is that you need end users with whom you've engaged in good faith over a very long period where you have trusted advisory level relationships with them so that when they run into a problem, they might call their like PEO actual to, you know, like raise the flag or whatever, but maybe they'll call you first and they'll ask your advice on things. And that is massive. And what you need as a young company, and this is like a big kind of like, I don't know, like it's not a bluff because we're in the middle. It's not a bottom line up front. We're in the middle of the conversation. But like, if you're a young company and you are serious about selling into defense, hire somebody who can advise a customer on the contracts process. Like hire somebody who's savvy with that, who has done that, who has run, you know, a former KO contracting officer, former whatever, program manager who's familiar with the contracting process. That is invaluable and you will win probably months to maybe years of accelerated engagement with a Gov customer, and you will generate a massive amount of goodwill.
To sort of put a bow on that for the listeners is that, hey, you have to understand how your customer buys and what that buying process is, and you need to have someone that is an expert in that process so you can make your thing easier to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to come to them with options rather than problems. Options rather than problems. And that's like, you know, that's kind of like platoon leader 101 stuff for infantry folks. You know, you never go to the company commander with a problem. You describe the problem and describe how you're going to solve it. And then, you know, and then let them comment and pick you.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Right. Or, exactly.
Or in my case, when I was a PL, the company commander wasn't a big solutions guy. So we just didn't go to him.
I mean, I had company commanders who came to me with problems and so like, you know, the flow can go any of many directions.
Yeah, it's bi-directional.
Exactly. So enablers on the congressional side is actually incredibly important. I would say that if we had not invested in year one of our company, in developing a congressional ground game, we would not be where we are now. And where are we now? Just to like foot stomp on this.
We are
entering low rate production into an Army program of record that represents tens of millions of dollars of recurring revenue for our company and our shareholders and stakeholders in exchange for delivering massive value to the warfighter. And that is, I think it's kind of like Holy Grail territory almost, you know, like, did you win a program of record is kind of the question that people ask. And like definitively, yes, in the case of Reveal. And we are now on the cusp of being the first ever commercial solution to be deployed into the Army's mobile environment. And there's just so much to say, but we would never have gotten here if we had not developed 4 years ago in year one of our company, a congressional ground game to get Congress actively engaged in supporting programs that we were engaged with. And what did that look like? Year one, didn't know anything. In fact, I wasn't thinking about this very much. I met with Palmer and Brian from Anduril. They said, hey, in 2017, early 2018, one of the very first things we did as a company, I'm talking about Anduril, you know, obviously like the unicorn of unicorns in our space, the big brother, the elder sibling success story so far. And anyway, Brian and Palmer said, without a doubt, the first thing that you should be doing is hiring lobbyists and understanding the Hill. And so in year one, we didn't hire lobbyists. We had no money. So I went door knocking on the Hill and developed a bunch of relationships. I understood what the NDAA was, the National Defense Authorization Act. I understood what the Defense Appropriation Act was, how those two things work together, how to get customer end user program input as like the receiver on the other end of an appropriation, all of this stuff. And like, we could go deeper on that if you want to, but I feel like it might get pretty academic and esoteric. But if we hadn't done that 4 years ago and then continued to develop progress and productive relationships with our Hill staff counterparts and our member counterparts on the other side, if we hadn't done that, there's no way we would have survived to right now. So I'm not saying like go flood the Hill. I'm saying like understand that environment, understand your customer or end user needs. If it comes down to resourcing, Congress is a massive enabler. On the flip side of that coin, and this is just a word of warning, and again, Tyler, kick me under the virtual table if you don't want to go down this pathway, but there's actually a negative consequence to inappropriately engaging Congress. And it is if you kind of ambush your customer with a big appropriation of, you know, congressionally appropriated budget that rams a product they don't want down their throats or on a timeline that they don't, that they can't countenance, you're going to engender the exact opposite effect that you want. And it's, you might realize some near-term revenue, but long-term you just burned a customer bridge, and that ain't good. And it's not going to serve
you. Short money, right? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Hey, would there be opportunities for maybe gimmick is a strong word, but like the ability to your point, pull a bunch of weird stuff left. Sure. I think the way, and what I'm hearing from you is sort of that way we want to be bringing sort of these new entrants into the market as they're growing is finding that equilibrium or harmony between the operational sort of requirements, the end user sort of needs, wants, desires, and sort of the corporate goals. And when you can find that and sort of set that in place, there are countless ways to really start to structure and optimize that. But sort of desynchronizing or maybe overweighting a coefficient in the broader equation versus all of them, inevitably creates problem. And also, like, you kind of get to do that like once or twice, and then the members might not notice because the members are doing democracy
sometimes.
Steps, yeah, fair. I was trying to be uplifting. The staffers will notice, right? And the staffers will remember and be like, oh man, we got shrieked at by these guys last time you did this.
That's right.
So yeah, I think there is a responsibility, one, to just, you know, if you're going to do it right. But, you know, taking the sort of the downside scenario away, I don't want to miss this sort of foot stomp on, you've got to understand the market in which you're operating, which is sort of, if everybody remembers the, like, how a bill becomes a law from growing up and like watching it on the VCRs in class, I'm dating myself now. You've got to understand, right? Like, how does a dollar come from Congress and get down to your users and your buyers? And where can you optimize or influence or augment or whatever the right sort of action word is? And that becomes sort of like a core tenet of your strategy.
Absolutely. I mean, the U.S. Congress for many years now has written more money into the Defense Appropriation Act than the president requests in the budget request that comes out every February. So the lesson there is Congress can turn on those spigots. They can do that. I mean, they can authorize and appropriate all kinds of resourcing. When they turn those spigots on, you need to make sure that the plumbing is all lined up so that that stream doesn't go somewhere that you don't intend for it to go, or it doesn't reach your intended objective or target, you know, program office too fast or at too high a rate that they can't handle it. And so, again, like, to, I don't want to go down that. I'm the kind of guy who will beat a metaphor to death, so I'm not going to continue that one. But like, you need open and transparent communication and partnership in good faith with all of these folks in the value chain. It needs to be parallel efforts with members of Congress, with the program office, with the end users, synchronizing all that. It's a complex dance. And, you know, our company by no means perfect at doing this, but we've learned a heck of a lot along the way. And I would say, if you're young in this process and haven't dialed all that stuff in, hire professionals. They are going to fix your problems, and it's not just your problems. They're going to help you solve the customer's problems with the customer's involvement and input. And it's going to be worth the money if you have the objectives lined up appropriately.
Yeah, I mean, you just took a bunch of the words out of my mouth in terms of sort of like walking a little bit of a summary in place, but it is a complex dance across the end users, sort of the customers, the maintainers, the sort of program executives, and then the allocators and the authorizers sort of up on the hill. Recognizing sort of the complexity of that dance, right? Like the 3-4 year journey you've sort of been on, sort of running across all of these different, you know, levels of the organization and the market. This is sort of last question I ask everybody. You know, you're king for a day, or, you know, you're Dumbledore. You get a wand and you get to change one thing sort of about, you know, this whole area. And I'll leave it like intentionally broad. What's the one thing you change and why?
Yeah. So first off, I'm more of a Gandalf guy than a Dumbledore guy, but
I'll allow it.
So
not everybody can be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I wear my imperfections on my sleeve. So what would I do? Too many times companies like ours, young companies, many times venture-backed, many times cash-strapped with a clear idea from our operating what the end of cash runway is. Too many times those time slippages for contracting go right. And they go right even beyond, and by right, just so that I'm not like continuing to tap into my military jargon lexicon bank or whatever. Slippage to the right just means things are slow and they're like delays in contracting, and it ends up a month too much, 3 years, you know, slower than you intended for it to be. I would, that's my change. You know, I don't want slippage in that timeline. I want time expectation, because like a company will flex and mold its operations to fit and meet that government timeline. But those slippages right mean unnecessary fundraising at times where you didn't need to fundraise, taking on dilution in the company and delaying the delivery of value to customers. I just wish that those timelines would be hit. I'm not going to call it any specific programs, and I don't even see it necessarily as a criticism, because it's so complex an environment that
always slower than you want it to be. Yeah.
Always. But like, I've seen just in the last year, 5 or 6 major program efforts that we've been involved in slide right by up to 6 quarters. You know, like many small company, like a venture backed small company, that's death. And if you can't project or forecast that kind of thing accurately, your constituents, which might include investors, board members, your internal team, like that's a morale killer. And this is a market where you don't want to degrade the morale of key deliverers of technology. So, you know, I'm not criticizing anybody, any specific program, anything. It's a trend. We've all seen it. But man, I just wish that timelines would get hit.
Dude, I love that. First, congratulations on all the success. I think this was an awesomely illuminating conversation because it's the sort of molding of theory and practice, or maybe it's, you know, practice informed theory, which at times I think is maybe lacking in today's world. So grateful for that. Also just appreciative of you being willing to share sort of the learnings and the experience and the journey. So I know you and I have sort of this shared vision of like, we want to make it easier for like whoever's next up and what that looks like. There's a bunch of sort of brush that we've got to chop in a jungle, but we want to mark a path so that it's easier for the next. And it just gets incrementally easier and easier and easier. So proud to call you a friend, proud to call you a colleague as we're trying to chop this wood, and really excited to watch what you guys do next over there at Reveal. So thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tyler. Awesome to be with you today.
Heck yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Wouldn't be a podcast without some show notes, so check them out to learn more about Second Front and what we're up to. Stay weird.